From the Land Grant University in Urbana-Champaign, Illinois, this is the Closing Market Report for the 20th day of November, 2024. I'm Extension's Todd Gleason. Coming up, we'll talk about the commodity markets with Greg Johnson. He's at TGM, that's Total Grain Marketing. We'll hear an interview with USDA ERS about a recent survey it has completed showing a larger population in rural America, also a more wealthy population, but fewer jobs. And then as we make our way through the end of the half hour, we'll talk with Drew Lerner at World Weather Incorporated in Kansas City on this Wednesday edition of the Closing Market Report from Illinois Public Media. It is public radio for the farming world. December corn for the day settled at $4.30 and a quarter, up 3. The March 2 and a quarter higher at $4.40. The May at $4.47, a penny and 3/4 higher. January beans down 8 at $9.90 and a half. The March at $9.90 and a quarter, 9 and a quarter lower. Bean meal up 80 cents. The bean oil down $1.56, and wheat futures up about 2 cents. Greg Johnson is now here. He's with TGM. That's TotalGrainMarketing.com in Champaign County, the elevator. Hi, Greg. Thanks for being with us.
Good to be with you, Todd.
Let's talk a little bit about what you're seeing in the marketplace today. I know there have been some effects from the increased war footing in Ukraine with Russia and the United States as well, putting those longer-range attack missiles into play. How much has that played into the commodity marketplace?
I think it's had a little bit of an effect, mainly in the wheat market, and then that spills over into corn. It really doesn't have much effect on the soybeans. So we've seen the wheat market pick up a little bit of strength. We've seen corn pick up some strength, not only from the news about the war in Ukraine, but also the fact that the funds, for whatever reason, have been big buyers of corn. They were short as recently as August, over 1.75 billion bushels, billion with a B. And since then, they've gone to a long half a billion bushel long position in corn. So they bought over 2 billion bushels of corn on paper since mid-August. And that's the good news. I guess the bad news is December corn futures have rallied from 385 at that low point in August now to 430 today. So we've had a 45-cent rally, which is better than nothing. But normally when the funds would buy that much corn, you would expect a little bit more of a rally than 45 cents. And I guess that just goes to show that the farmers were maintaining a lot of inventory of old crop corn and new crop corn. And they've done a good job, I think, of selling into this rally. As the funds buy, the farmers are easing up on some of their short, on some of their long positions. So the good news is 45 cent rally in corn. Would have liked to have seen it, and maybe we'll get a little bit more out of it. Technically, the charts would say that December corn might go to 440, March corn might go to 450 before we run into some technical objectives. So that's another dime higher. So the good news is we've had a nice little rally in corn, and farmers are taking advantage of that.
That's a shift in their position from wanting not to have corn to wanting to own corn of just a bit more than what is expected to be left over by the time we get to next fall from this crop, that is. How long did it take them to do that?
Mid of August, and we got September, October, November, so about 3 months. In 3 months' time, we went from a short 1.75 billion position to long 0.5 billion. So, yeah, just over 3 months.
And you said that there isn't particularly a reason. Is there anybody that's making some conjecture about what this reason might be?
Well, we know we need a few more corn acres next year. Demand has been very good, and farmers have been very tight holders up until recently. Now that the harvest is over, the speculation is that maybe the funds have ridden this thing down for over a year. And maybe they've gotten squeezed all that they can out of the short side of the position. And now maybe they'll try to take a stab at making some money from the long side. Fundamentally, we still have a 1.9 something, almost 2 billion bushel carryout. So we don't want to get carried away. But, you know, the funds can push the market lower than what it should be maybe according to the supply and demand numbers. So they by the same token, they can also push it a little bit higher. And hopefully that's what we're seeing now and give farmers an opportunity to take advantage of that.
What's the possibility that the funds were aware that farmers were storing corn, not selling it across the scale, and as you said, are looking to take advantage at some point and will begin to sell those long positions sooner rather than later?
I think that's a very plausible explanation. With the price of corn below $4 through all of harvest, farmers were not in a position to make any money at those prices. And so, I've heard farmers say, "I can always lose money. Why lock in a loss now? I'll just, roll the dice and wait a few months and see if the market gets better, and hopefully it will." And in this case, it did. So I think we're now to the point where maybe farmers can make a little bit of money, not a lot of money, but make a little bit of money with the good yields and the $4 plus corn prices. So I but until this week, the market has been sub $4, and farmers have been very tight holders of corn.
Very astute. It is much easier to lose money than it is to make money. Soybeans, what are you seeing in that marketplace today?
Well, we're not seeing the spillover. The funds are not buyers of soybeans. I think what they're looking at is huge world-ending stocks. We're looking at world-ending stocks of 130 million metric tons. And to put that in perspective, we only grow 425 million metric tons worldwide. So 130 out of 425, one out of every three bushels of beans, is not being used. It's going to be stored and carried over into the next year if we have a normal crop out of South America. So that huge supply hanging over the market is keeping funds from buying beans, and it's also keeping farmers willing to sell rallies. The good news is we hit $10 cash again here in November for a brief period of time, and we've done that every month so far this year. But that seems to be where we run out of steam, and then they back off to 950, 975 until we make the next run back up to $10. But it just doesn't seem that anybody wants to buy beans given the current supply and demand situation above $10.
Are you hopeful December will show us a $10 cash price as well? Oh, well, maybe not hopeful. Do you think it will show us a $10 cash price?
I think that, yeah, there's still enough uncertainty in the South American growing season. I mean, they're only 80% planted down there. So, they've got the whole growing season ahead of them. Their critical time frame is January, February. That's when they set pods and fill pods. So in December, there may not be a whole lot to talk about, but there's no guarantee that they're going to have the bumper crop in December either. So I think there's enough uncertainty that, we could probably take another run at $10 and then, and back it on down. So January, February will probably tell the tale as far as the soybean market is concerned.
Consumption for ethanol, or at least production of ethanol, has been on a tear. When will that slow down?
Typically, it slows down in January. Here in the fall, ethanol companies can buy corn from farmers a lot easier. And so you're seeing them, increase their production, increase their purchases of corn stocks so that they can make more ethanol when the corn's not moving near as freely. So I would think you would see ethanol numbers start to level off. I mean, it's not going to drop dramatically, but it'll probably level off here. Well, now that we're harvest is over, we could start seeing that anytime now.
Thank you very much, Greg.
Hey, thank you, Todd.
That's Greg Johnson. He is with TGM. That's Total Grain Marketing. Joined us on this Wednesday edition of the Closing Market Report. Do visit our website. The address is willag.org, where today you can register for the Farm Assets Conference or the Illinois Farm Economic Summits. They're coming up in the month of December. More details a bit later in this program. Of course, online right now at willag.org. Up next, we'll hear from Tom Wirth. He's with USDA ERS. That's the Economic Research Service. We spoke with him last week at the National Association of Farm Broadcasting Convention in Kansas City about a recent survey the ERS had done related to rural America.
Yeah, it is called Rural America at a Glance. It is an annual report that looks at trends in population, migration, industry, and employment and poverty in rural America.
What are key takeaways this time around and differences from previous reports?
Well, one key takeaway is that the rural population is growing. Now, from 2010 to 2020, that decade saw a decrease in the rural population. However, from 20 to 21, that reversed, and the rural population started growing, and it did from 21 to 22, and now it has continued from 22 to 23. Now, in rural America, there is a natural decrease in population. There's more deaths than births, but there's enough net migration into rural America to more than make up for that natural decrease, and rural America is growing.
What do we know about those that are migrating into rural America?
They tend to be older. And that's another thing that comes out from this report, is that rural America is aging. If you take a step back and look at a longer time frame from 2010 to 2023, the number of people who are of working age from 15 to 64 decreased by 2 million, from 30 million to 28. But at the same time, people aged 65 and over, that number increased from 7.4 million to 9.7. And so the average age of rural America has been increasing.
Sounds as if they're probably well-heeled moving to rural America, but also means there is a labor shortage in rural America.
Yes. Another aspect of the report is a focus on employment. And in 2023, there was an increase in the labor force, the number of people working in rural America. It increased by 0.9%. At the same time, the unemployment rate was at a record low of 4.1%. And what this indicates is that people were re-entering the workforce, or people who are planning to retire have kept working.
Why do we think that's the case?
That is why this report is here, is that we don't know the causes behind, but this provides an overview that then helps us focus on where it would be good to ask questions like this and investigate further into causes.
Beyond the migration into rural America, what other key takeaways?
Other key takeaways are that the distribution of older age rural residents is much broader. In 2010, there were 439 counties that were older age counties that were 20% of the population was 65 and above. And now in 2023, it is now 855, and it's spread in every region of the U.S. And then there's another implication, something called a dependency ratio. And that is the number of people who are under the age of 15 or 65 and over, people need probably some extra help relative to the working age population. And the dependency ratio in metropolitan areas is around 58 people who are under 15 or 65 and over per 100 working age people. But when you go to rural areas, especially the most remote rural areas, that number can be as high as 72 people per 100 working age population.
Does that mean that those that are not employed are self-employed, relatively speaking, taking care of dependents in those areas? And then what about the services that may or may not be lacking?
And that's why we look at that statistic. It has a lot of implications for services, for healthcare, for older age care. And so the report covers that as well, that the daycare facilities have changed over time, and that also home healthcare has gone up, and other services like that. So yes, absolutely. The working age population will be employed to a greater share for the, people under 15 or 65 and over.
Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Tom Worth is the Director of Resource and Rural Economics Division at USDA ERS. I spoke with him at the National Association of Farm Broadcasting Convention in Kansas City last week. Lerner from World Weather Incorporated in Kansas City now joins us to discuss the climate and weather forecast. Hi, Drew. Thank you for being with us today.
Yeah, it's another good day. We're on the cusp of winter weather, right?
Yeah, well,
we have to enjoy it while we can.
Not very far away. Meteorological winter begins December 1st. Speaking of which, can you look forward or talk about weather forecast and climate for this coming winter? And if there happens to be anything you see that is of interest, which we should be aware of and watch?
Yeah, you know, the weather is always cyclical in my book. I'm one of those cycle guys, and I go back and I study long-term trends and try to find and identify certain patterns that will prevail. And what I've seen here is there's two patterns setting up for this winter. One, everyone just got through seeing as we went through this past 2 or 3 weeks, and that was where storm systems dropped down into the southwestern portions of the western United States, and then turn around and move towards the central U.S. plains, and then up into the Midwest, kind of makes a little bit of a kind of a loop type thing. These storms will return to that pattern again a little later in the winter. I didn't explain that too well. Let me try that again. Systems will drop into the southwestern United States, and then they'll move northeastward from there, from the southwest plains into the Midwest and the northeastern states. Now, as we go deeper into the winter season, the pattern will get pushed to the southeast just simply because we have more cold air around. And so that would suggest instead of the U.S. plains getting really wet and parts of the western Corn Belt, that we may shift that in a few weeks to the southeast, so that parts of the Delta and the Ohio River basin area into the northeastern United States might see some periods of wet weather like that. And of course, it'll be colder, so we'll have some snow occurring in the northern part of that region. Now, this is just one of two patterns that I see dominating as we go forward through the winter. The other pattern is what you're going to probably see take place as we move forward into next week. And that is one that brings colder air across Canada into the northern U.S. plains, and then they drop down to the southeast part of the U.S., cutting through the Midwest. Now, in these two weather patterns, there's two situations that will occur. The first pattern that I mentioned, we'll see a lot of moisture occurring from southwest to northeast, and probably focus on the Delta and the Ohio River Basin in the northeastern states, as I mentioned before. It'll also be warm biased in the eastern part of the U.S. and cool biased in the west. The second weather pattern, where we get this, the cool air masses dropping out of Canada, will be much colder. And those systems will drop down through the northern plains and upper Midwest and pass into the eastern Midwest. And then we'll see some big storm systems along the upper U.S. Atlantic coast as the cold air catches up with some of this moisture that we've talked about. So those will be the two primary patterns that we'll have over the winter. In general, we're probably going to see the temperatures end up averaging a little bit cooler than usual in the southwestern part of the United States and in the northern part of the Midwest, probably the upper Midwest in particular, from the eastern parts of the Dakotas into the upper Mississippi River area and into the Great Lakes region. There will be some cold weather in the northeastern states periodically. I think this will probably be most significant when we get into the second half of winter. So probably February, maybe late January, February, and into early March. So if you're an energy trader, that might be of interest, but it comes pretty late. And as far as snowfall is concerned, I think you'll probably end up seeing an above average amount of snow this season in two areas. One will be in the upper parts of the Midwest, so probably the Red River Basin and parts of the upper Mississippi River Basin. And the other will probably be in the middle and upper Atlantic coastal region.
Okay, so I was listening through that, and I was thinking that what you were telling me might miss part of that Red River area in the Dakotas and parts of Minnesota and the upper Midwest, upper Great Lakes area, because some of the rainfall and precipitation, probably as a wintry mix, would be along the Ohio River Valley. Sounds like that's maybe not quite right. That could be the lows that are the systems that are dropping out of Canada that are dropping so much snowfall in those areas. And what I was really concerned or wondering about was whether those western areas, Nebraska, western Iowa, maybe parts of Kansas would be picking up enough rainfall to help alleviate the dry subsoil moisture levels they have had for a very long time.
Yeah, that's a really good question. You know, we've done a good job here recently with putting some moisture in the ground. In fact, hard red winter wheat country is really quite moist now. I think the month of November will probably go into the books as being close to one of the wettest on record. But there are places in the upper Midwest and the northwestern part of the corn and soybean belt that is pretty dry. Even some of the eastern areas are. You know, the pattern that I've described, one of those two patterns, the wetter one of the two, if you can imagine, when we get into spring, early spring, that will lift the jet stream to the northwest. And so this pattern will return to the plains and parts of the Western Corn Belt, but it'll probably be something like maybe late March or April, and we will get back into a wetter mode. So those areas may not be all that wet during the course of the winter, and there may be a little concern about that, but it looks to me like there's going to be a fairly good opportunity for moisture when we get into the pre-planting season, if you will. In fact, it wouldn't surprise me to see parts of the Midwest complaining a little bit about too much moisture around when we do start getting ready to get into the fields.
Yeah, so my intuition tells me that that means that the pattern will be Arkansas, Tennessee, Louisiana, in the winter months, lifting to the northwest so that we have the Missouri, Iowa, northern parts of Illinois where rainfall might be more present in the late winter months. Am I correct on that?
Yes, I think that is exactly what we're looking for at this point. It's a little bit early. We're still playing around doing some of the research here, but that is the strongest signal that I've seen so far.
All right. Anything else before I let you go for the day?
You know, just a real quick comment about the, you know, the southern hemisphere for the Brazil and Argentina. There's still a lot of folks that think La Nina is going to come in and have a big impact. And, you know, right now we're doing really well in South America. If you look at the precipitation recently as a percentage of normal, it does look a little bit like La Nina because the rain amounts have been less than normal in southern Brazil and parts of Paraguay and Uruguay, even some areas in Argentina. So we might be seeing something like that evolve, but I am still very strongly of the opinion that we're going to see a timeliness of rainfall in both Argentina and Brazil as we go into these next several weeks. And I think that the crops are still going to end up doing well with or without a La Nina influence.
Thank you very much, Drew.
Have a great day.
You too. Drew Lerner is with World Weather Incorporated in Kansas City. Joined us on this Wednesday edition of the Closing Market Report that came to you from Illinois Public Medium. It's public radio for the farming world, online, on demand, anytime you'd like to listen to us at willag.org. That's willag.org, where today you'll find a way to register for both the Farm Assets Conference as well as the IFAS series. That's the Illinois Farm Economics Summits. The Agricultural Economist, the Farm Doc team, and I will be traveling around the state in the month of December. The Farm Doc team will be at all four of the events in Champaign, Mount Vernon, East Peoria, and DeKalb. In Champaign, at the Farm Assets Conference, you'll also be able to catch up with the crop scientist and a few others. The agendas are online right now today. You can find all that information at willag.org, but don't wait. Get yourself registered. The Farm Assets Conference is the 13th of December, followed by the Illinois Farm Economic Summits on the 16th, 17th, and 18th the next week. I'm Illinois Extension's Todd Gleason.